Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Millwall captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We had the high notes on the park. It was, that's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate we never won anything.
Lane's in trouble, there's Pete Kirk. The super sub has done it again, and Millwall are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who are wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection!
Hello and welcome to the NFC podcast. This afternoon, myself, Jay and Buster, I'd like you to welcome back Andrew Patterson. Welcome, mate. How's it going?
Not bad, thanks. Good to be back yourselves, guys.
I know, too bad. Getting it.
Yeah, as good as can be expected after what was another disappointing afternoon at Fir Park, Jay. And I think if we were to go back on it and look back in the main kind of theme of the game, we'll talk about kind of separate incidents a bit later on, but there wasn't very many lessons learned from last week's defeat in the Scottish Cup at Ibrox. We still invited Rangers on to us a lot. While we did soak up the pressure to a certain extent, it always felt inevitable that they were going to score, and when they did, there was just kind of no signs that we had any way back into the game.
Yeah, I mean, I think the turning point for the entire game is obviously Scott McDonald's sitter. I think, you know, obviously if he scores that, not only are we 1-0 ahead, but the sort of sequence of play that leads to him getting sent off, obviously, you know, doesn't happen. So we could have been looking at 1-0 with 11 men still in the park, and instead, you know, we miss that sitter, we go down to 10, and from the minute that McDonald went off, we seemed to just chuck any interest in scoring or getting a result, to be honest, other than a 0-0. I understand that the idea of defending and giving teams a certain level of respect, because you, of course, you know, you need to have a game plan, you need to be organised defensively, but when you sit as far back as we did today and as we did at Ibrox, then inevitably you're going to concede goals. We are not good enough. We don't have good enough defenders to be able to sit that far back and expect to keep a clean sheet. So from the minute McDonald went off, I think, you know, at least one Rangers goal was coming, and I don't think anybody would have put money on Motherwell scoring at all. So unfortunately, the minute McDonald went off, I think, you know, the writing was on the wall, and we were destined for a defeat.
Buster, it wasn't without its controversies. 4 minutes in, Michael Harlan sent off with what was a clearly high tackle in Carl McHugh. I sometimes kind of think that referees are a bit more lenient when it comes to red cards, given in the early stages of a game, because players are just bedding into the game almost. But I don't think there can be many arguments from the Rangers camp over that sending off. You then have a period where Motherwell are in control of the game and threatening before Scott McDonald kind of sees red, and as a result sees red. After that, we barely kicked a ball. And I suppose I've heard Mark McGee's post-match interview in Radio Clyde. He says that he doesn't believe that it merited a red card, despite the fact he says he didn't actually see it. It'll be interesting to see how the club react and whether they do appeal McDonald's dismissal.
Well, McDonald's dismissal wasn't as soft as I thought it was. I've seen it back now a few times. You know, I was pretty adamant that it was a pretty fair tackle. He won the ball. He definitely won the ball. The ball seemed to take a wee skip off his big toe. His opposite, his left foot, big toe, and it went away from him. He then slid in, kicked the ball off Kenny Miller, who was trying to kick the ball. And when they came together, you know, McDonald's foot was probably no more than 3 inches off the ground, but, you know, his studs have went into Kenny Miller's ankle. I think it was Kenny Miller, at least, anyway, sorry. It went into Kenny Miller's ankles, or ankle, and it's been deemed a red card. I think it was extremely harsh. I'm reluctant to admit I can see, you know, how it looks bad, but, you know, as far as I'm aware, he was still loosely in control of the ball. He got to the ball a good, you know, half second before Kenny Miller kicked it square at him, and a hot, you know, the two of them clashed. The ball went away backwards, and as I say, he stuck his ankles into Kenny Miller. He stuck his studs, sorry, into Kenny Miller's ankles. I don't think it was a red card, but as you say, it definitely changed the game. I think Joe Chalmers going off changed the game a wee bit as well. You know, people have got their opinions on Joe Chalmers, but. You know, he was sitting in there, he's got a left foot. When McMillan came on, you know, no harm to McMillan, he'd done pretty well, but there was never any sort of threat of us going outside on that left-hand side. Any time McMillan sort of pushed forward, he had to stop, come back and look inside or look back the way to Stevie Hamill. Stevie Hamill wasn't going forward, whether, you know, that's due to, you know, his faith in himself or the tactics, or... You know, if he's maybe just doesn't feel like, well, again, as I say, maybe he just doesn't feel like he can get up and down there as much as he used to. But there was no one there coming out on the left hand side. Any time we got there, we had to go back into the middle. McDonald said, "No, certainly changed the match." But you know, after we got to half time, there was absolutely nothing on offer from us at all.
Andy, I was quite disappointed in the fact that we didn't make a change earlier. I know that's sometimes a criticism levelled at Mark McGee. It was the fact that guys like Craig Clay, Carol McHugh, I thought they were looking quite leg weary as the second half wore on. We weren't offering any sort of threat. The amount of chances that Rangers had, I'm thinking in particular the one that was kind of certain that the South Stand was about to erupt and it was just blocked in the goal line. And there was a couple of good saves from Craig Sampson as well, it must be said. The kind of writing was on the wall for us, but McGee was reluctant to change it, and as it turned out, the changes actually only came after the first goal for Rangers.
Yeah, I mean, the first change altogether was one, you know, I fully expected, given the fact that we had a man advantage at the time, that the Elliot Freer didn't actually come on, which seemed the kind of obvious substitution when you have that man advantage, when we had the initiative, when Chalmers was going on, putting on a more offensive player on and continuing to take the game to Rangers. So that was an interesting one straight away. As Busta says, I thought McMillan, after taking maybe 10-15 minutes to sort of settle in, actually gave a really good account of himself. And there were two or three occasions as well where, had passes been kind of put through to him, he showed a willingness to run on and into space. And I thought he accredited himself pretty well.
Just to interrupt you there, Andy, as well. Sorry, I'm not having a go at McMillan. You know, I think.
No. I'm just kind of, well, you'd mention him, but you know, the kind of, I thought the substitution, or it seemed more sensible to me was rather than putting on another defensive-minded player as Jack is, you know, in comparison to Joe Chalmers. I thought the sensible option would have been to go with a more offensive, you know, change at that point.
Yeah,
as I say, I totally get what you're saying. You know, criticising McMillan in any way. So that was the kind of first change. Again, going back to the issue with McDonald with the red card, I haven't seen it beyond the other side of the pitch from where I was sitting in these stands. So didn't have a view of that at all. Had a quick glance at it. Someone, the boy in front in the East Stand, was kind of reviewing it on his phone at half time. And having seen it there, if he's given a red card for that, you have to set that alongside the challenges that Kiernan made right at the halfway line. Is that his name, Keenan?
The
boy that probably shouldn't actually have been playing last week and this week with the suspension. So you set it against that. Where's the difference there? I mean, if he's given a red card for McDonald for that, then surely that one merited it as well. I also put it again a similar challenge that Clay made, that he actually spoke to Clay in the second half. And again, viewing it from distance, or, you know, one time kind of view, there didn't seem a remarkable amount of difference between the three of them, yet we've ended up in the red card for, you know, for McDonald, which is proved to be the game changer, you might argue. In terms of later substitutions, it was very much felt like too little, too late. As you guys have already said, the minute it went to 10 against 10, we looked like a whale that had been beached, sitting with a big sign saying, harpoon me. And it was just a case of, you know, as you say, the inevitable. And it was dragging on and dragging on. And you hope by, I can see what he's doing at a certain extent, that you just hope that they eventually run out of ideas. They take the view that we'll settle for a point as well. We'll go home with, you know, being without a full complement for half an hour, 45 minutes. It's not the worst point in the world. We do the same, we move on. But, you know, we just get deeper and deeper and get more and more stretched. And as it was inevitable when it came. And by that point, we'd absolutely no foothold in the game for us to get anything back into it. He chucked on, made the changes then. By that point, you know, you're looking at Moulton's ran himself into the ground, trying to get balls that's going 10 yards ahead of him, 10 yards in front of him, you know, with two men jumping on his back at all times. So we were done. As you say, we never ever looked like getting a goal the minute McDonald went off. And doesn't hurt as much as last week's defeat, but very frustrating loss. And, you know, you argue that the half an hour we've had against 10 men or however long it was, and to come out of that, you end up with a 2-0 defeat, that's got to be looked at an opportunity missed again.
I don't want to be too downbeat, because we finished 2016 in quite a high, but it does feel that we've taken a few kicks where it hurts to start this year. Back-to-back defeats against Rangers are always going to be disappointing. Jay, how do we... Well, I suppose the first opportunity to pick ourselves up comes on Tuesday against Ross County up at Dingwall, but do you feel that the morale seems to have slipped a bit? McGee was very positive. In fact, I will go into a wee bit of detail about that. The Clyde One interview, it was polar opposites from last week, so he'd obviously been told to kind of smarten himself up and cheer up before he spoke to anybody this week, because he was saying that our energy was fantastic, the spirit in the team's fantastic. He believes that it's the best squad he's had since he arrived back at Fir Park. That all being said, we're still right in the midst of a relegation battle. I'm just watching Kilmarnock have clinched a late goal against Ross County to win today. So another kind of result that just kind of beds all the teams together and continues the fight down at the foot of the table. How do you see these two results? And do you think they make a great deal of difference in the grand scheme of things? Or do you believe that it's just kind of par for the course to lose a couple of games to either half of the Old Firm and then just kind of try and regroup and go about your business again?
Yeah, well, I suppose I could see both sides. I mean, on one hand, losing to Rangers in the league, yes, as I've said before, I think that they're, you know, an average football side. I mean, some of the things, particularly in that first half an hour, Rangers were absolutely woeful. I mean, you look at how many times that they just passed the ball out the park and things like that. They're not a good football team. So obviously you're going to be disappointed to not take anything from a game against them, particularly given, you know, we were in the lead up to the 85th minute at Ibrox, and we should have been 1-0 ahead. And McDonald would inevitably have stayed in the park unless he did something else completely daft after that. But I think Rangers, losing to Rangers, you do have to accept it's going to happen. Going out the cup to them, you have to accept that, yeah, it's a difficult task. It's going to happen at some point. It just so happens that the way the fixture list and the cup draw happened, that they were back-to-back. So I don't want to, you know, apply too much an emphasis to the two defeats, because it is just potluck that it happened to be, you know, one Saturday and then the next. But I suppose it depends on how you look at it. I thought the first half hour, particularly after, you know, 4 minutes after the Halloran went off, we did look as though we thought, right, this game is here for the taking. We were getting forward, trying to create chances. Cadden was, you know, a great ball for McDonald's setter. We did look like a team that thought we could win it. Whereas as soon as McDonald went off, and we probably never know. I don't know whether it was instructions from the bench to then just sit back and play for a draw, or whether the whole team's morale went down. But we didn't look remotely like the same team. We didn't look like a team that could compete with, you know, 10 against 10 against Rangers, which makes you wonder what the thought process when, you know, before the game, when we were going into 11 against 11, because we didn't look as though, it looked as though we had a man sent off and we'd completely forgotten that they had a man sent off earlier in the game. We didn't look like a team that thought we could get a result at that point. And that was poor. And coming back up the road on the radio, all the pundits who watched the game seemed to agree. We just looked like a team that was resigned to defeat, which is worrying because that can't be your mentality. It doesn't matter if you're playing Rangers or you're playing Ross County. If you're in a situation where, I think they said in the radio that that's 1-7, which is interesting because you look back in December and we were talking about how it was actually quite a good month for us. But 1-7 isn't good enough when you're starting to languish at the wrong end of the table. And if you don't look like a team that believes that's going to change, then it's going to be a long, hard couple of months for us. You know, I get, you know, there was nothing in the game plan that they were going to get a man sent off. So to go from a side that looked as though we thought we could win it to then thinking, all right, that's it, the game is lost because the team's evened up, I just find really, really disappointing. And it is, you know, concerning going forward because you need to look like a team that thinks that they can go to Dingwall and win. I'd like to think that we do, but the team that played from 30 minutes onwards today didn't look like a team that thinks that it can compete, you know, against a, you know, a team with the same number of players as them.
Basta, I'm kind of swinging towards a kind of departure for Mark McGee. Not right now, but more just at the end of his contract. I would kind of like to see Mark McGee move on from Motherwell. I've talked about the interview that he did for Radio Clyde. I thought it was quite bizarre again, but it's kind of now just becoming a bit of a the many faces of Mark McGee type thing, where he's all his personalities are coming out, sometimes all at the one time, which is was quite baffling. But I feel he looks, he's kind of shown signs to be slightly beaten, despite the completely upbeat tone of today's interview. You kind of wonder at the same time, are we a team that are capable of now pushing our way out? We certainly did last season. Are we as strong as we were last season? I don't know, I guess we kind of lack the width that was brought on by Marvin Johnson, but we've certainly made good acquisitions. Chris Cadden is certainly a much better player than he was this time last year. So is Lou Moult, for that matter. But it's going to be interesting to see the response from the team, because a few defeats now, and now we have to set ourselves for a relegation battle. It just feels that the mood's pretty downbeat, and I think that the manager, it does come down to the manager, and maybe his relationship with the fans doesn't help, but I think he's the root cause for me.
I would just like to sort of say what Jay said there again. We've just played Rangers twice. As bad as Rangers are for a Rangers team, they're 21 points ahead of us in the league. They're 21 points ahead of us for a reason. Understand, you know, you're maybe not putting the judgment on McGee in these two games alone, but it comes in the back of these two games where we had a pretty woeful performance in the second half today. You know, when we were the main team there for 20-25 minutes before McDonald gets sent half, you know, it looked like we were going to go on and stroll that, to be honest with you. We missed a few chances, had all the ball. You know, it was complete opposite of what it eventually ended up. You know, Rangers sort of were sitting, you know, not really creating much going forward, I didn't think. And then, you know, as you say, we lost McDonald. Whether or not McGee's the man going forward, only time will tell. If, you know, as I say, after today's games, I'm looking at it here. We've gone down a bit of league position, I believe. I think we were 9th, we're now 10th. We are still only 2 points for 6th. And I don't know, I think Inverness maybe got beat or something. I don't know, maybe they drew, didn't they? No, but we're still 4 points, 4 points off the bottom. So there's very little changed in that, you know, that sort of 17 pack there. Could, this time next week, you know, if we beat Ross County and then we beat Hearts, might seem unlikely, but, you know, if that happens, are we going to be on here singing and dancing, talking about how, oh, we're now sitting sixth and it's looking great for us? Whether or not McGee's time's up come the end, I think his contract's up in the summer, so whether or not he wants to move on, whether or not the club want him to move on, whether or not, you know, it just comes to a head, who knows, to be honest with you. It will probably depend on how we finish this season, and I think it's a bit early to be looking at who we can replace McGee with, or thinking of whether or not he's going to be replaced. But it's certainly something which we'll come to a point maybe around about April, depending on where we are in the league, depending on how we're doing in the league. You know, if we suddenly win 3 or 4 games in the trot, end up sixth and manage to stay sixth, there's going to be people who are wanting them to stay on. There's going to be people who want them to be involved. You always have your usual people who have never liked them, which is fair enough. They never wanted them there, never wanted them back, etc. Fair enough. But you know, if we finish sixth, we do well. If we finish 10th, you know, it's fairly comfortable. There might be people who want them on. If we end up in a complete relegation scrap, maybe everybody, or maybe a lot of people will think, you know, there's not much happening here. We might try, we'll see what we can do elsewhere. But I think it's a bit, I don't want to say mental, but it's a bit early to be looking at replacing them, especially at this point, I think, because, as I said, the 6 or 7 teams at the bottom there are pretty close, and there's still a lot to play for.
Andy,
I was just to kind of build on what Buster's saying there. I think we need to remember the brief that he's actually been given as well, which is to keep us in the division and introduce further youngsters into the team. And currently, he's achieving both of those aims. Whether that's acceptable, whether we could be doing better, up for debate. But, you know, it would appear to be, going by what he said previously, he is achieving the kind of the task that he's been set. I mean, it remains to be seen how high we do go in the division. Hopefully it's going to be higher than where we are currently. As I understand it, the kind of the remit was always to keep us in the division, that this was going to be a season of kind of changeover in terms of financially behind the scenes, that if we can achieve our top flight status again by the end of the season, and it's going to be in terms of the restructuring of finances, what's available budget-wise, that we're going to be in a better place for tackling next season. And it may be, depending whether it's McGee, whoever it is going to have a larger budget, I don't know. But, you know, it can boil down to, if you want to take it down, he is achieving what has been said of him, what has been asked of him currently.
But I think, if I remember right, there was talk of the budget being, or the, you know, the budget and aspirations of, like, finishing 10th. You know, there was talk of hopefully getting a wee cup run and things like that, but obviously that didn't happen. You know, we got the pointy end of the stick there, withdrawn one of the better teams, I suppose. But as you say, you know, as you're basically saying, you know, I think he's been tasked with keeping us in the league. If we finish 10th, 9th, 8th, 7th, whatever, obviously the higher up the better, and depending on how we finish will depend on what the club want to do, what Mark McGee wants to do, and, you know, it'll come down to discussions between them, I suppose.
Andy, do you think the fact that McGee wasn't actually a new face at the club is possibly what's making things feel a wee bit more stale for some supporters? There hasn't really... While the personnel in terms of the playing staff has been changing quite a lot, the same guy in the dugout, maybe people are a bit frustrated at the lack of change. There's certainly from where I was sitting at the game today and at previous weeks as well, that I think that even personal differences against the manager aside, people are just beginning to turn on him a bit quicker than they were this time last year.
Possibly. I think, looking around the East Stand today as well, there was certainly a more vocal element than I can recollect in recent times. Whether that's down to the frustration of the individual fixture, the individual circumstances, the substitutions that kind of failed to arrive as early as I think most people would have looked for, I don't know. I do think, as you say, though, there are people who simply don't want them to be there. I mean, there's one that always makes me smile, is like every tweet that Mother will ever do, there's a response from someone that gets by and immediately tweets back, McGee out, you know. So there are people in our support that feel that kind of strongly about him. And you're going to have people that are ultra positive, supportive of him, that the minute we get a good result, anything appears remotely positive, they're going to attribute that to McGee and his good work. And equally, the minute you have something that goes against us, like a result today, the same people that doesn't really matter whether we're doing well or not, the minute something goes against us, they are going to voice their displeasure because they don't want the manager there. It's a difficult one, but I think he's there. He's not going to go, I don't believe, and certainly until the end of his contract. So it's a case of, you know, we do the best that we can. Now he's got two or three new guys in there, the squad. He's freshened it up, so possibly one or two more, going by what they've said. So he's got an opportunity there. He's freshened things up. We've got one or two, you know, the likes of McMillan that's been added to the squad throughout the course of the season. So there is a kind of squad there that's developing. And, you know, Ross McLean, unfortunately, with his injury, he would be another one. We've got Alan Campbell to come through as well. So there are a good few players there that we can mould into what we've got, add into what's existing, you know, in the team. Lucas is another one to come back in if you feel he can make a kind of contribution as well. So he does have a pool of players now, and it is time certainly for him, you know, if he's not, you can't really say he's not earning his money, but, you know, it is time for him to kind of help us really push on and get up the table as much as possible, you know, and push us on a wee bit. I'm happy for him to be there, certainly at least until the end of the season. I'm happy with what he's done in terms of blooding the players on a more general level. Results, I think, certainly could have been better in some respects. There's elements of our play that continue to frustrate, but on the whole, I'm happier that he's there as our manager, and I certainly get faith in him that he can certainly see us safe between now and the end of the season. What that does in terms of people's perceptions, whether that changes things, no matter how we finish up the table, that's really for each individual to consider. But I go back to my point. It's like, you know, last season he was brought in with remit. The position was in was to keep us up. He did that. We were perhaps slightly fortuitous, you might argue, in ending up with a top half finish. However, we got there. We did it. It was merited. That was a good season. Certainly compared to where we were when he took over. Now this season, bit of a crossroads as to what way it can go, but, you know, I have faith in him, and I hope that the players that he's added, you know, his recruitment wise, and the youngsters that he's bringing through to complement what we've already got, will have enough there to enable us to finish 10th, and then we take it from there, you know, the summer again for going forward.
Jay, just the last one in today's game. Certainly was noticeable as well that there was a certainly the minority of the Rangers supporters that like to indulge in the wee ditties. You would kind of have to hope that going forward the Scottish Football Authorities and Police Scotland step in to avoid repeats of that. We haven't missed them coming for league games in their big numbers as they normally do, and I can't remember ever that there have been for a good 10-15 years they've been that vocal and that sectarian in their tone for the duration of the game. You've obviously tweeted about it and got a whole host of reprobates now causing you hassle on the internet, but the kind of sensible response from what you would hope from Motherwell Football Club was that they have reported it, because the same thing, Motherwell tried to engage this week with even initiatives like the David Cooper suite. It'd been a bar for both home and away supporters, as it normally is, but it kind of is more to the attention if Rangers or Celtic are involved, because there's more of them, they've got their own reputations. That kind of, anyone that thought that the David Cooper bar being as busy as it was today, that felt vindicated by that, possibly now has to take a backward step when they see what the Rangers supporters are actually like inside the ground, and see why. That's obviously why the Motherwell fans resent having to share what is regarded as their space with visiting supporters.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not the minority. You know, that's often the argument that's used. Oh, there's a minority of all supports, or there's a minority of Rangers fans, or whatever you want to say. But at the end of the day, the South Stand holds, what, about 4,500. From where I was, it didn't look as though it was sold out. So if you say 4,000, and anybody who was at the game, I don't know what it sounded like in the TV, but anybody who's at the game knows that about 95% of the South Stand were indulging in, they say, you know, the songs that you're talking about. So the idea that it's a minority and things like that is just a nonsense. And you're right, I think, you know, in terms of the Cooper Suite, I think it was more the sort of the act of courting of away fans into the Cooper Suite. I don't think anybody would have any real reservations with, you know, a couple of Rangers fans turning up at the Cooper Suite and being allowed to come in for a pint. That said, you know, it's not a radical idea to stop them doing so. You know, you get, I don't know if Jack Daniels still do it, but Jack Daniels was a good example of a pub that was always open to away fans, except when the Old Firm came. So the Cooper Suite issue for me, I think, or for a lot of people, looking at the reaction on social media, I don't think it was necessarily the idea of Rangers fans being allowed in the Cooper Suite. I think it was more the active attempt to advertise it to them and kind of increase the number. Because whether, you know, Rangers fans in particular want to admit it or not, there is a bit of a rivalry there now, ever since the playoff. You know, they love the idea of, oh, no one likes us, we don't care, which we all know is nonsense. But you just have to look at the way they celebrated beating us in the Cup, and even just the utter abuse I got on Twitter earlier for calling them out for, you know, their bigoted songs, to show you that we've got so far under their skin after the playoffs. So there is a lot of bad blood there now. And when you factor in the sort of the numbers of the Rangers fans and the behaviour and the singing that they indulge in, you know, it is a recipe for trouble. Regardless of, you know, whether how many you want to say it is, or whether it's a minority or whatever. So I think that's where the issue lies. There is a problem in the Rangers support. There are plenty of Rangers fans I know that are very decent football fans who don't indulge in it and have said that they, you know, are only Rangers fans because they were brought up to be, and it's their club as much as anybody else's. But a lot of those people don't go to the games anymore, and there's a good reason for that. And I think that we have to acknowledge that. And it's all very well saying, well, you know, it's not everybody. Let's not tar everybody with the same brush. And away fans should be made welcome. But there's a way to do it, and pandering to them is not it. When you have them singing, we talked about Mark McGee earlier, regardless of your opinions on them, when you have 4,000 to 4,500 away fans singing the things that they were singing, putting aside all arguments about strict liability and the Offensive Behaviours Act and all that kind of thing, it's just not acceptable. And to know that we are those very same fans are the fans that we are actively advertising and actively trying to seduce into coming into the Cooper Suite, I think does leave a bad taste with a lot of Motherwell fans. And you just had to look at the likes of social media when, you know, the advertisements were going up, you know, one graphic for Motherwell fans, another graphic for Rangers fans. I think that's where the issue is, and I think that's where fans start to feel as though the club is kind of not with them, if you like, not standing by them and not understanding a lot of the vitriol and a lot of the utter abuse and just absolute subhuman behaviour from some Rangers fans that just makes them really, you know, the idea of inviting them to the Cooper Suite and the idea of even sharing a stadium with them at times, it's just something that leaves a really bad taste in Motherwell fans, a lot of Motherwell fans' mouths, I think. And I think that's where it stems from. It's not, you know, petty or don't let Rangers fans have pints in the Cooper Suite. It is, you know, it's a serious issue. You know, it's, you know, after the game at Ibrox, we obviously managed to get away towards the park bar in the other direction, but it looked as though it was all kicking off because Rangers fans had obviously came round to sign the corner of the Motherwell fans as they came out of the stadium. You had 60 20-odd-year-old guys falling over themselves to have goes at young kids. You had everything that you've kind of witnessed at the game today. You know, there's only so much of it that you can accept as acceptable professional from a football club like Motherwell, inviting fans and being, you know, seen to kind of rise above it all. But you also want to feel as though your football club's got your back, and I think that's where the issue comes in.
See, for me, on the bars, because I think I would like to avoid it kind of coming across as this is a kind of attack on the commercial side of it, which I don't think you've done in the slightest, to be honest, mate, and I certainly didn't intend to. But for me, I think you can still have it as a Motherwell bar without having to be exclusive to Motherwell supporters. For instance, you could have Motherwell highlights on, Motherwell, like Motherwell fans encouraged to go along in their colours and everything else. Just wee things that would enhance the feel of it as a completely Motherwell dedicated bar. Yes, when you're playing Hearts, Rangers, whoever, the fans are more than welcome to come along, but they'll be well aware that it's our ground. It's not saying that they should be beaten up and everything else and chanted at throughout the duration of their visit, although if it is Rangers, then I would maybe encourage that. But just a kind of a sensible approach, but have it as a, make Fir Park a, it is our home, so make it feel like home, and the Cooper Suite should feel like that. But I think, in fact, I'm pretty certain from reading the reactions, inviting Rangers supporters when you've not built up the David Cooper bar as a Motherwell bar as such, then that puts people off. It puts people off even trying it. I saw a few replies from, like, Ian McCaskill, who's bar manager there, saying, well, we've improved the beers, we've improved this, we've improved that. And that's great, because we've been saying for ages it needs improving. But at the same time, if you're going to, I think you've got to do things gradually. And like, for talking, say, we were in one of the Rangers pubs before the game at Ibrox last week. You certainly knew where you were with the memorabilia in the walls. The fans were allowed to sing along with their songs and everything else. There was Rangers goals on all the televisions. It just, you knew very much that you were in a Rangers establishment. Don't get me wrong, I don't think there was any point where it was particularly offensive or anything else, but that's, it would be ideal if we could have something like that, preferably without the sectarian undertones. But I assume you know what I'm getting at here.
Oh, aye. I mean, you know, as you said yourself, we've said for quite a while that the Cooper Suite doesn't have the same feel about it as maybe even just your local boozer. And I do, I think there's a lot of room for improvement. And I think, as I said before, I think that's where the issue lies, or at least what I got from a lot of the replies, including my own, regarding the advertising of the Cooper Suite. I don't think anybody's saying, you know, let's exclude away fans. You know, when we go to away games, you know, you often find yourselves in, not necessarily out and out, you know, pubs that are dedicated to the home side or anything like that, but we've often found ourselves in, you know, pubs having beers with the opposition fans, and there's no issues with that. In some ways it's to be encouraged, because, you know, if there was more fans drinking with each other and actually getting along with each other, you wouldn't be hearing half the stuff that you hear from the Rangers support. Well, maybe that's a wee bit of an optimistic or a utopia, but, you know, that kind of idea of camaraderie and friendly banter and stuff like that is certainly something I think that the vast majority of at least non-Old Firm Scottish football fans are quite happy with. Even up in Inverness, you know, in between Christmas and New Year, we ended up having a couple of beers in the proper sort of Inverness social club, whatever you want to call it, at the ground. And it was nice enough, it was great. But even that had that kind of similar feel. You don't feel as though you're in a pub, you don't feel as though there's a particular atmosphere. You kind of feel as though you're just there to waste time before going into the ground. You know, it might be too cold to stand about for half an hour in the away section or the home section, wherever you're going, so you just sit in there to keep warm and maybe get a beer. And I think that's what they need to do. They need to kind of break down that kind of perception and turn it into a proper pub. And you're completely right to use, you know, where we were before Ibrox as an example. There is absolutely no question of where you are in a lot of those type of pubs. Some of it is sinister. Some of it is that kind of, as you said, sectarian undertones, which obviously is to be abhorred. But in terms of, you know, all the memorabilia and knowing exactly where you are. Yeah, I think that'd be a great idea. And as I said before, I think that a lot of the sort of the backlash was the way it was advertised. It was almost, you know, as I said before, two graphics, one for Motherwell fans, one for Rangers fans, both exactly the same with different coloured props. And you're thinking, well, it's not meant to be that way. It's meant to be advertised for Motherwell fans. And then if you want to put at the bottom that away fans are welcome, that's fine. But let's not treat us as, you know, as though it's a neutral bar welcoming to both sets of supporters and hoping that both sets of supporters turn out in their numbers. It's a Motherwell bar first and foremost. And I think that's where the sort of the backlash came from.
Also, can I just also say as well, I'm not a frequent user of the Cooper by any means, but any time I'm in it, it's always busy. You know, so again, for example, when you've got a team like Rangers or Celtic who unfortunately have a lot of fans in the local area, you know, if they see that and say even 50 or 60 people turned up, it would probably get hectic in there. You know, it's not as if it's, again, speaking from my own experience, sorry, it's not as if it's utterly dead any time I'm in it. You know, it's always busy. There is a very orderly queue for the bar. And, you know, it takes a wee while to get served sometimes because it is so busy. But I don't see, as you say, you know, I don't have any problems with away fans being in there. I've been in there, I've been away fans before. As you say, we've been the away fans in other bars before. But I don't see the need to sort of advertise and pander to possibly another, you know, I read there was only 5 or 6 people in there, to be fair, but, you know, possibly you're hoping you'd maybe pick up another 30, 40, 50 people in that, but I don't see the point in that if it is, you know, certainly busy enough, so to speak.
I think the thing is as well, that memorabilia and kind of decoration to form a sports bar wouldn't come at any cost for Motherwell, because there must be that much stuff that sits about around Fir Park that you can make the place look very good very quickly. So I think turning it around would be quite an easy process, and I just think it could work if it's orchestrated the right way. But I think that was a pretty poor starting point, and I think that it was enhanced by the opposition today as well. But we'll go on and talk about Tuesday night's game against Ross County very quickly, because we did discuss it on last week's podcast anyway. But I suppose now knowing, Andy, the results over the weekend, with the exception of Celtic Hearts, who play tomorrow lunchtime, and let's face it, neither of them concern us very much anymore. I think it's got to be looked at as an opportunity to bounce back. County will be hurting as well after losing a 2-1 lead at Rugby Park today to go down 3-2. So both teams will be in rather low spirits, you would have to imagine, but it's a hard place to go generally as a rule of thumb. But we have won there before. We're more than capable of beating them. We've just got to hope we can put in a performance and pick ourselves up for the second time in as many weeks.
That's it. It's kind of staple away top flight game. Take a point, and I'd be quite happy with that, in all honesty. And take a few Hearts at the weekend at home. But we've did pretty well last couple of games, results-wise, up there. I think at the tail end of last season, was it 3-1 we ended up winning? I think it was. And then with the one-each draw, when I think Moult scored earlier on this season.
Yeah,
so
scored with a penalty.
Either of the two of those outcomes, I would be quite happy with that in Tuesday. It's all the more important with the fact it's another team round about us. So worst case scenario, you don't lose any ground on them. If you get a draw, and it'd be wonderful to get the result. Not quite sure how the other fixtures go during the week, so what kind of context a point would be in relation to those. But that for me is the minimum we've got to hope for. It's coming back home unbeaten. Interesting to see what kind of team we go with when we go up there. I think Lucas comes back into the equation. Obviously, we've now lost McDonald, so he has options there. Does he introduce Freer from the start? Is that an option if we're going for 4-4-2? Do we bring someone else in? You know, he's got a couple of decisions, you know, to make in terms of the team there, but ultimately, you know, we've got to look to take at least a point and
try and build some ground again. We had, I think, what we're looking back in our away games, we get the point at Aki's, and I think before Christmas with a draw with McDermott as well. So if we were able to eke out a few games, win at Inverness, of course, aye, who can forget that? So there is a wee pattern emerging that if we can turn in some of these kind of profitable away days, then and start to turn round. I know you always go on about keeping your home ground as a kind of fortress if you can, but you know, give us something to go into the Hearts game with behind us, and that'd be a positive for me.
Jay, three new faces already in this transfer window. I was discussing it with you guys last night. I can't really remember there being as many fixtures on the night of transfer deadline night across the whole of the UK, actually, as there are this year. So you'd have to imagine that it'll be kind of Monday, early Tuesday, that all our business will be done. We've got two in loan, a goalkeeper from Everton, a defender, Zach Jules from Reading, and also Elliot Frere, who signed on a permanent deal from Forest Green Rovers. I actually tried to get a Forest Green Rovers supporter on the podcast to give us a bit of background on Elliot, but unfortunately the couple of thousand followers of the podcast were mainly based in the Lancashire area. Don't know any Forest Green Rovers supporters, which was quite a surprise to me, to be honest. But we saw a brief cameo from him today. It's very hard to judge him on, and I don't think we'll be as naive to judge him in that, but you would hope that these guys could play a part, particularly the two outfield players, because I think it's two areas where Mark McGee has identified that we need bolstered, to say the least.
Yeah, absolutely. It will be interesting to see, you know, whether either of them get a nod on Tuesday, because I noticed that McManus, who I thought had a half-decent game today, at least a couple of really, really good tackles and blocks, probably saved us this Saturday. I noticed near the end he seemed to pull up with a bit of a twist or a strain at one point when he'd been chucked up front. I noticed Louis Moult seemed to be nursing a bit of a knock late on. Obviously, McDonald going off suspended. So, you know, we may have to freshen it up on Tuesday. It might not just be a case of the new guys sitting on the bench because they haven't found a way in yet. It might be that we actually need to throw a couple of these guys in, depending on the outcome of some of those knocks. Whether, you know, the likes of Frere is fit enough yet. I know he was out injured, remains to be seen. But it's, at least you've got options. You know, again, we were starting to maybe stagnate a little bit in terms of the options available to us. Of course, there was young guys coming through, and it's obviously great to have guys like Campbell and McMillan, etc., on the bench. But because Ainsworth seems to have fallen out of favour, you weren't really seeing anybody on the bench the last couple of weeks that you really thought could come on and seriously change the game in our favour. Whether, you know, the new guys will be able to do that, who knows? As you said, we can't judge them yet. But it's at least interesting and exciting to have some new players in the squad. It does give you a bit more cover. It gives you a few more options. I kind of tend to agree with Bust earlier on, as much as I quite like McMillan. I think he's done really well since he's been given a game. He's not a left midfielder. So depending on what's happening with Chalmers, would Frere start on Tuesday night if fit? You know, so it's interesting. We can now go into, after maybe finding a settled 11 that we kind of were able to predict every week, without, you know, aside from the odd youngster that seemed to kind of rotate every so often, I think we're now in a position where, once again, we're not too sure what the team will be. So again, it just depends. If McManus has pulled up a knock, maybe Jules will be thrown in at centre-half. If Chalmers is out, or McGee is happy going a wee bit more attacking, then maybe Frere will get his debut from the start on Tuesday. So it's interesting. I think the one change that you can assume won't be happening is Griffiths in for Sampson, because for all Sampson's sort of detractors this season, of which I've definitely been one, I think he basically did really well really well today, and you really saved us from an utter embarrassment.
Yeah, he certainly did. I'd set up and then had broadband problems, so all my notes are down the stairs. I could not remember that goalkeeper's name, so that's why it was the goalie from Everton. That, so thanks for clarifying that for us. guys, we'll wrap it up there, but thanks very much for your time. It's quite rare that we ever record following a match, so it's been quite interesting given that it's kind of still a wee bit raw, but a disappointing afternoon, but we go again midweek, a good chance to make up for it, and then the Hearts game at Fir Park next Saturday, so we'll look forward to those. Thanks very much.
Cheers.
No bother, thanks.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back at the start of next week. Until then, thank you, goodbye. I don't care whether you hear this. I don't care if I'm alone here, singing songs to myself. There's nobody else around, around. Meet you up at the Indian part of the town shut down. The people left with the bags. The kids, so there's not a sound, a sound. But I must get from there to here. There's a small voice crying on the other side of the river from here. It's too late to phone her now. What went wrong? Your grades were good. It would take a left-wing Robin Hood to pay for school. Your dad's a boozer and you keep him alive. Girl and